Welcome back. Second hour of the Bible study. I'm Chuck Rathard. Telephone numbers are 505-7850 and 1-800-730-2727 if you'd like to join us with a question or a comment here on this open phone part of the program. We'll take your questions on just about any subject as it pertains to religion, faith, Bible, or the church. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. It's a privilege to welcome back my pastor, Pastor Marty Springer, pastor at Trinity Lutheran Church in Edwardsville, now in the big chair there since the beginning of September. It's almost 6 months already.
That's right.
So you got that chair all warmed up yet?
It's nice and warm.
Is it nice and warm? Was it warm in Honduras?
It was. Certainly, it's relative, Chuck. It was warmer there than it was here.
I know you had 60 down there and everybody was cold. We had 60 up here and we were just rejoicing.
That's right. People were getting out coats and scarves and complaining about how cold it was. It was unseasonably cool for 3 or 4 days while we were there. The nicest days, it would be 70, 75. Other than the rushing around, I really don't think I even broke a sweat.
Every year, for a number of years now, people at my church, including my wife, Debbie, participate in a mission trip, a medical mission trip. There are some folks from Holy Cross Collinsville. There's some folks from North Carolina.
Iowa.
Yeah, what, 25 to 30 people, I guess?
Yes.
And they work for months getting ready for this trip, gathering things that they can take down there, including medications, pharmaceuticals, and stuff to give to the children, things like that. I think Debbie's gone for 8 years now. And frequently in the past, the pastor of our church in Edwardsville has gone along, sort of the pastoral representative there. And so that job fell to you this year.
It did, and I was really pulled, having only been at Trinity for 6 months. I really had some concerns about whether or not I should go. You know, just assuming my responsibilities, so much going on at Trinity now and in that transition stage. I'm really blessed, first of all, that your wife, Debbie, and Sherry Brakehane, and Paul Darr, three real key members of what we call Starfish Enterprises, really encouraged me. I jokingly say that Sherry did a lot of arm twisting. Mm. She can be pretty persuasive. And they really encouraged me. Our board of elders and our church council both said, you know what, you make the call. We're going to support you either way. And so I'm really glad that I was able to go.
So this is not the first time you've gone on a mission trip.
No. I had been to, my first experience was my last year at the seminary. I had a chance to go to Kazakhstan. And, in fact, I came and I think I did an interview with Paul Clayton. I don't think it was with you, was it?
Nope.
I came and did an interview regarding that Kazakhstan trip. That was an unbelievable...
Kazakhstan, a former...
former
Soviet
satellite, yeah. And that was a wonderful experience. Following that, my first assignment, I was at St. John in Chester, Illinois. They had been sponsoring a boys' orphanage in Gonaives, Haiti. And I went down on behalf of the congregation there, just to kind of scope it out and see how things were going. And then this Honduras trip would have made my third.
So what did you learn in your time in Honduras?
I learned that we Americans are fat, dumb, and happy, that we take too much for granted, that we were dealing with the poorest of the poor, and the slightest kindness, a hug, a kiss, a handshake, literally made their day.
Most of us Americans, if we'll take at least 10 seconds to think about it, know that we're fat, dumb, and happy. But we don't know what you know, because you have seen real poverty, real difficulty for people, third world people like the people of Honduras. Any particular stories, any particular people,
sure,
that can help me sort of measure the difference between living here in Middle America and living in Honduras?
Well, two stories that I shared, both in adult instruction doctrinal refresher class last night and yesterday morning's Bible class. And I'm not as emotional now as I was when I was down there. But it's a very moving experience. I was working in the dental clinic. A lady and a little boy came in. They patiently waited their turn. A little boy that I figured maybe was 3 or 4 years old was actually 8 years old, but was the size of a 3 or 4 year old. He got into the chair without any coercion, and as soon as the dentist started getting the tools and things ready, he got a little concerned. We convinced him that he needed to open his mouth. Chuck, there was not a good tooth in his mouth. His teeth were so infected that the dentist couldn't do anything. And after literally pulling me over there, the dentist pulled me over there so that I could get a good look in his mouth. She continued to speak to the mother and the child in Spanish, essentially shrugging her shoulders and said, "Well, Pastor Marty, you know that this child is going to be dead in a month, that the infection was that bad, that she could not pull any teeth because of the infection. It was too bad even to give antibiotics. We didn't have strong enough antibiotics or enough antibiotics. And so here's an 8-year-old child who's going to be dead in a month."
What do you do with that?
It breaks your heart. It absolutely breaks your heart. I held the child and prayed with him, and you can't see something like that and not be changed. I thought I could do it. As I recall it, it just makes it that much more vivid. I don't think that the dentist even told the mother how bad it was.
You know, I was in that doctoral refresher course that you were talking about before last night, and my oldest daughter, Katie, is
a dentist.
She's going to graduate from dental school here in May, and she came along later. We picked her up in the car, and I recounted that story. And not that I didn't believe you. I believed you. But I'm thinking to myself,
it almost sounds like that I'm exaggerating on purpose, doesn't it?
It almost sounds like that. But, I didn't believe that you were exaggerating, because my wife's been down there for 8 years. I've heard these stories before. But I said to her, you know, Pastor Springer said, this boy's going to be dead. And she goes, oh, yeah. And then she gives me the medical explanation of how infections move to the brain and everything else.
The dentist didn't say it specifically, but the first thing that I thought of, I guess it's like sepsis. It's just a total body infection. What I mean by halitosis.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, this was even beyond halitosis. You know, his teeth, he didn't have a good tooth in his mouth.
And you probably would have liked to have brought him home and every other kid that you...
Ironically, we made a trip. I'll tell my second most impressive story, I guess. But we made a trip up to what they call the ranch, which is a series of foster homes where these children are fostered. There was a little boy there. That's actually the second story. There was a little boy there who was found at the dump. He was one or two, and his 6-year old.
What's the dump?
Well,
American dumps are probably not all that bad.
No, this is not a landfill. This is where people, especially little children, are scavenging in garbage to try to find things to eat and maybe something to cover themselves with or whatever. This little boy and his sister were found at the... In fact, I won't even call it a dump. I'll call it a garbage heap, because it's not the American connotation of a dump. The 6-year-old was caring for the 1 or 2-year-old as best as she could. They were both taken. Unfortunately, they were separated. But the little boy came to live at the ranch, as they call it, also sponsored by WGO, World Gospel Outreach. The little boy just latched onto me as soon as I got there, just held onto my leg, wouldn't let me go. So I'm holding him and carrying him around, and your comment about wanting to take him home, as glued to me as he was, he never let his foster mother out of his sight. She couldn't get out of his line of sight. And so I jokingly said, I'm going to take this little boy back to the United States with me. And man, oh man, he was reaching for the foster mother and immediately went to her. And I said, tell him I'm teasing, tell him I'm teasing. As soon as she did, then he came back to me. But that's so moving, you know, that through this truly scripturally based organization, miracles are happening every day, and that's one of them. This little boy is now chubby and healthy and growing and being nurtured in a home environment with a mother and a father and siblings, where moms and dads are doing what they're supposed to do.
Well, let me make a suggestion. When it comes time, because usually at Trinity, a week or so after the team returns from Honduras, two or three people will stand up and explain what they saw. You shouldn't try to do that.
Well, maybe by then I'll be a little better.
No, it's not going to work.
No. I'm just too tender-hearted for my own good.
I don't think you probably want to do that because obviously it broke your heart to be down there. Now, having said that, the reason I can encourage you that way is because we've watched other people break down in front of church who have tried to get through their story and couldn't do it because it's so heartrending to sort of relive it in front of people. So the one thing that is almost absolutely consistent among the people who have come back from this Honduras trip over the years, to a man or to a woman, they say, it's changed me. It's changed me forever. Particularly if it's their first time experience. Were you changed
yes.
by this?
Yes.
How would you elaborate on that?
I think probably in any number of areas. First of all, not taking anything for granted, being thankful for the blessings that we have. It makes me ashamed because I know that I do take things for granted. Secondly, it's an opportunity to live out what James said about faith without works being dead. We truly had an opportunity to put our faith into action. At the end of the day, we were all exhausted, but it was a good kind of exhaustion. As busy as I am at Trinity, I'm not on my feet all day long. And all of us were down there. I wasn't working nearly as hard as many of the team members, or as hard as the doctor, or as hard as the dentists, you know, who were actually on just the time, the day that I spent in dental. I'm sure that the dentist extracted 6 or 8 teeth just as fast as they could possibly be extracted. You know, that's, in fact, the dentist was even saying that her arms were sore. You know, the section sure. between the wrist and right. the elbow where the muscle that she's working with when she's pulling those teeth aches at the end of the day because she's extracting so many teeth.
Now, there are professionals down there. Debbie, my wife, she is a trained medical technologist, and there are optometrists that go down.
Yes, two optometrists from Collinsville, Dr. Meyer and Jeff Herberts. Both optometrists from Collinsville. Paul Darr is a nurse anesthetist, has a broad range of medical experience.
But then there are other folks. There are accountants. There are people who are not necessarily...
There was even a pastor there.
Well, that's kind of where I'm headed here. You had a broad spectrum of people all the way from teenagers,
yes.
young kids who haven't embarked on their careers yet, to people who have been in their careers for a long time. Your career, if we can use that term, is shepherd. So if you're a medical professional, you probably see some things from a medical professional's perspective that affect the way you process information even when you get back to your job. Did you learn anything about shepherding while you were down there, Pastor?
I really did, because in addition to the hands-on medical aspect, again, I worked in pharmacy, I worked in medical, I worked in dental. I didn't get a chance to work in optical, but that was also a great opportunity to work through the evangelism section. Every patient, once they go through the steps to get their medical needs met, then is is shepherded into an evangelism block, if you will, where we had the opportunity to share with them our faith in Christ. And while I have to say that many, many of the people professed faith in Christ, there were also opportunities for people to come to faith, and they did.
So how does that work, Pastor Springer? I would think that if anybody is not nervous about evangelism or evangelizing somebody who lives in Honduras, it would be you. You're a pastor. But for those people who are down there because they have a different kind of expertise, whether it be dental or medical or whatever, I guess just about everybody takes their turn in the evangelism
yes.
portion of the trip.
Yes.
And that means that, you know, a lay person who does not profess to have all elements of the faith completely squared away is trying to share that faith with somebody who doesn't speak your language. You need an interpreter there to work with the Spanish. It almost seems like it's doomed to fail, that evangelism just wouldn't work. Is that...
No, that's far from the fact. I had nurses. I had worked with nurses. I worked with teenagers. One young man works for the city of Collinsville in their water department. Everybody took their turn in evangelism, and I think one after the initial trepidation, I know a young man from Trinity said, "I don't want to do this," and I said, "No, you are going to do it." I said, "You sit here with me. And we're going to go through this a couple of times, and then you're going to do it." And
wow, you're a hard taskmaster.
I won't mention any names, but it was Adam Brakeham. he was fearful, and
I'm not surprised.
And you know, I mean, this is a junior in high school.
Yeah.
Wonderful kid. I shouldn't even call him a kid. Wonderful young man. Strong Christian faith. But like anybody else, was nervous about witnessing in that environment. He sat through two sessions where I led the way in evangelism, and he said, "Pastor, I got it." So we swapped chairs, and he couldn't have done a better job. I will say how blessed we were to be working with the translators that we work with. My español es no muy bien.
Be careful now.
Actually, es poquito.
Some of the funniest stories we've heard come back from the Honduras team are the way that the Americans handled Spanish.
Yeah, you have to be careful. You have to be careful.
That they said that they
now, if Debbie or Sherry tell you any stories about me, take them with a grain of salt.
Absolutely, understood.
But the translators were good. They translated exactly verbatim. I know that for a fact. They made a tremendous difference.
Pastor Springer, did you see God in Honduras?
I did.
It's quite a claim.
It's quite a claim. I know that he's there. I know that he's concerned about the people of Honduras. Let's make it even a little bit more personal. I saw Jesus in Honduras. I saw him through those who were being his hands and feet. I saw him in the lives of people who have nothing and yet have faith.
Did you see him in those people and their hands and feet differently than you see him when the people at Trinity are working and doing the service they do here in the United States? Is it different?
I would say yes, that it's different. I wouldn't say better or worse. I would just say different because of the circumstances, because it is so poor down there. I know when I went to Haiti, that was a nightmare. The poverty was so grinding. What I'm told, and I haven't researched this, but more than one person told me that the only nation poorer, the only Central American Caribbean nation poorer than Honduras is Haiti. So that should give you some idea of the grinding poverty. There appears to be no middle class. There appears to be no infrastructure. You're either grindingly poor or you're rich, and there's just no in-between.
So let's say you and I are sitting on an airplane somewhere, you're flying somewhere, and we get to chatting. We don't know each other, and You tell me, well, you just recently went to Honduras. And you've been to Haiti. And the poverty in those places, to use your term, is a nightmare. It's excruciating to witness and experience. And I say to you, that's why I don't believe in your God. Because I can't believe in a God who would allow people in the United States to have so much and not be thankful for it, while people in Honduras and Haiti have so little and are in such desperate conditions. I don't want anything to do with your God. What do you say?
I can understand where you're coming from. It is a conundrum. There's no doubt about it. But I know a God who is loving. I know a God who reveals himself through Scripture, who tells us that he loves us and that he cares for us, and gives us an opportunity to extend his love to those in that situation. I don't make the rules. I don't call the shots. I'd like to know why we have so much and they don't, but I'm not God. I'm going to trust how he's revealed himself to us through Scripture, a God of love, a God of care, a God of concern. That's the God that I want to serve, and that was an opportunity for me to do it.
Now, it's a year away. You know, you're not committing to anything here. I understand that things change, and when December and January roll around next year, you'll probably be thinking about this. But would you like to go back?
I would. I don't. At this point, I can't say I'm absolutely going back because
obviously
you can't say
anything.
That's why I
say I don't want you to make a commitment here. But you want to go back?
I do want to go back. There's no doubt about that.
And what is it about that experience that is calling you back? That makes you want to do that again?
Just
you're going to get your heart broken again.
I know. And it's an opportunity for service. It's an opportunity. Maybe it's a little bit selfish on my part, but the appreciation of the people who are there, you know, selfishly, in the midst of that broken heart, it makes you feel good.
Can you explain that?
I can't remember when I've ever been hugged or kissed or embraced or smiled at as much as I was in Honduras. And I tend to be pretty hands-on
and pretty affectionate. Americans can't understand the most.
Yeah.
Because that's one of the things that the folks who have been to Honduras have said, is that these people, and I'm just going to overgeneralize here a little bit, but these people who have so little are still in many ways so content and so happy. While we Americans, we have so much, and we just seem to be in a constant state of turmoil because we're worried about so many things.
I agree.
All right, you're listening to the Bible Study. Pastor Marty Springer is here with us. He's from Trinity Edwardsville, and our numbers are 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. We get to the other side of the break. I'm going to change the subject a little bit, but if you have a question on Pastor Springer's Honduras experience, that will certainly be welcome. We'll be right back.
Diane.
And I'm Roland.
On the next afternoon show, 3 to 6 on Monday on AM 850 KFUO.
The Green Doctor, Dr. Chuck Aaron. And we're going to talk some more about this green gospel stuff and what drives your theology, your politics or your politics. I don't know. It's confusing.
Susanna Ottman will talk about her book, All I Need is Jesus and a Good Pair of Jeans. It begins at 3:05 on Monday, the afternoon show on AM 850 KFUO.
Well, a nice pair of shoes is good, too.
Sometimes, yeah.
When it's so cold outside that eating ice cream seems like a good way to warm up, you're ready for some relief from those midwinter blues. Well, here's just the prescription for what ails you. Stroll through the Victorian charm of Henry's Garden, where you'll be embraced in the warmth of the colors and fragrances of over 8,000 orchids, arrayed in a courtyard setting straight out of yesteryear. You can forget about winter daily at the Missouri Botanical Garden's 91st Annual Orchid Show from 9 to 5 through March 15th. For more information, contact mobot.org.
Another example of the accuracy of the Bible. Hear the story next on today's Creation Moments. And now, here's our Creation Moments host, Ian Taylor.
Scripture notes several times that King Solomon married a Pharaoh's daughter in the 10th century BC. His dowry for this marriage was the city of Giza, which he received from the Pharaoh. Many Egyptologists and biblical critics have claimed that this was simply impossible. They base their argument on a 14th century BC Egyptian inscription. The inscription shows a pharaoh speaking with his daughter with the caption, quote, "From of old, no Egyptian king's daughter has been given to anyone," unquote. However, in 1 Kings chapter 11, verses 19 to 20, we read of a pharaoh giving his sister-in-law in marriage to an Edomite prince. This took place just a few years before Solomon's reign. Extra-biblical sources tell of another pharaoh who gave his daughter to a Libyan noble later in Solomon's reign. We would have to conclude that the Egyptian royal traditions of the 14th century BC had changed by the 10th century BC. After all, that is 400 years later. While many scholars doubt that the Bible presents history accurately, believers know that the Bible presents us with the story of our salvation. That salvation is based on real people and real events in history. So we thank God that He has given us an accurate account of our origin, our purpose, and our destiny, beginning in the book of Genesis and ending in the book of Revelation.
To purchase a copy of Ian Taylor's book, In the Minds of Men, call us toll-free at 800-42-BIBLE or visit us online at creationmoments.com.
As you can no doubt well imagine, when you've been in the same building for as long as AM 850 KFUO has, there are a lot of telephone extensions and lines established for different reasons, and we hope we're making things a little easier by adding just one more. If you'd like to contact anyone for any reason at AM 850 KFUO, remember the phone number 1-888-4KFUO-AM. That's 1-888, the number 4, and KFUO-AM. And save it in your cell phone book.
A better education can mean a better job and better pay. The counseling and information services of the Educational Opportunity Centers can help you for free. EOC provides you with information on all forms of education beyond high school. Why not contact them today? EOC has 8 convenient locations in the metropolitan St. Louis area to help adults with questions about higher education. All services provided by EOC are free.
It's an Ask the Pastor Bible Study. I'm Chuck Rathert. Pastor Marty Springer is here today. He is pastor at Trinity Lutheran Church in Edwardsville. Our numbers are 505-7850 and 1-800-730-2727 if you'd like to join us with a question or a comment. We spent the first half hour talking about the just-completed Honduras mission trip, which is an annual feature at Trinity in Edwardsville. Pastor Springer made his first trip to Honduras with our mission team this year, and so we talked about that. If you have a question about that, feel free to call in with that question. And in the meantime, I'd like to play some audio from the Associated Press here, the audio feed that we get from AP. It turns out that Billy Graham's daughter has a fairly clear perspective on the end of all things.
Or she thinks she does.
Excuse me. That's what she says. We're going to listen to that, but I see we got a telephone call here, so let's take care of that first. 505-7850-1-800-730-2727. Hi, Lois. You're on the Bible study.
Hi, Chuck, and hi, Pastor
Springer. Hi. Thanks for calling, Lois.
I just wanted to ask you about the little boy with the bad teeth. Did him and his mother receive the Lord, or had he been baptized, and was he one of God's own?
He had been baptized, Lois. I do know that, and the mother was a Christian, so I'm thankful for that.
Well, thank you, because that's our only hope.
There's no doubt. No doubt of that, and I appreciate you bringing that up and emphasizing that. You can't imagine how heartbroken.
Oh my goodness.
I don't think I'll ever forget you know, looking in that little boy's mouth.
Yeah, I was heartbroken just hearing you tell the story without even seeing the mouth of that little boy.
Well, and Lois says, grandchildren, does your mind run to your grandchildren?
Absolutely, sure absolutely, does. Sure. Yes.
All right, Lois, thanks.
Thank you, Pastor Springer, for going there and for being willing to go back again.
Thank you, Lois.
God bless you.
All right, that's Lois. 505-780-5180-730-2727. Back to Billy Graham's daughter here. Let's listen to this report from the Associated Press.
Coming soon, I'm Steve Coleman with a closer look. Evangelist Billy Graham's daughter says increasing natural disasters, Israel's rebirth as a nation, and the proclamation of the gospel to every nation are signs that the end is near. Ann Graham Lotz, who's now 60, told the National Religious Broadcasters Convention,
I believe if I live out my natural lifetime, I will live to see the return of Jesus Christ to this earth. I believe that we're living in the last generation before he comes back.
But until he does,
the world is crumbling, isn't it? And it's unraveling, and I don't think it's going to get better. I think superficially maybe, but it's not really going to get better, not if what we're experiencing is the judgment of God, which I believe it is.
Amid growing tensions
and the intensity of the spiritual battle that's taking place right now, and let me just tell you that my family is like at the vortex of that. I can tell you all about spiritual warfare.
Billy Graham's daughter, Ann Graham Lotz. I'm Steve Coleman.
She could be right. She could be wrong. What do you think about her comments?
I think that her points are certainly well taken. As I said yesterday in Bible class, it's closer today than it was yesterday. But I don't know that I would be so presumptuous as to say it's going to be before I, you know, that if I live out my natural life that I'm going to see it. I would like to. I would like for him to come back. I would like for it to go to heaven. But I'm not going to be that presumptuous to try to nail it down and say, well, it's going to be that soon. Jesus said even he doesn't know, that the Father knows, and that the Father will let him know when it's time. I'm just not going to be that presumptuous.
Well, this always brings us to an interesting place because the Bible does talk about the last times, the last things. It's not like the Bible is completely silent on that. What the Bible is clear about is that no man knows the day or the hour.
Correct.
So if anybody says it's going to be on August 10th, 2009, so
I can tell you right away it's not going to be on August 10th, 2009.
Oh, you have some inside information?
Well, I can tell you that if no one knows, then it's except the Father, then how can this person say it's going to be on August 10th, 2009?
Then there is the interesting speech, I guess I'll call it, that Jesus made. Jesus is on the scene, and he says to some of the people in his hearing that, you know, that when the sky is red in the morning, it means this, and when the sky is red in the evening, it means that. You know how to discern the signs of the times, but you don't know how to discern the signs that are in your midst, specifically Messiah. So he seems to suggest that if you're paying attention, well, you're probably never going to be able to pin it down to a day or an hour. But if you're paying attention, maybe you ought to see certain signs that bring you to the conclusion that Ann Graham Lotz has come to, and that is it's soon. And it's going to be years. It's not going to be hundreds of years or thousands of years. Is that a wrong conclusion to draw?
I don't think that it's a wrong conclusion. I'm always leery of anyone who says, you know, I'm gonna try to narrow it down. Okay, what Scripture teaches us is that we need to live each day as if it were the last. That it's closer today than it was yesterday, and it's going to be closer tomorrow than it is today. If we're living the way Jesus wants us to live, if we're being proactive in sharing our faith, if we're doing the best that we can to live lives of faith, then we're prepared, okay, as best we can. We're sinners. We're doing the best that we can. I am not going to get wrapped around the axle on trying to predict it or trying to narrow it down. Again, I think That's pretty presumptuous.
Wrapped around the axle.
I'm sorry.
That sounds painful. Wow. So, you know, what you and I think, especially what I think, nobody cares about that.
I care, Chuck.
Well, God bless you. That means there's at least one.
Actually, I'm his pastor. I have to, so.
But when Billy Graham's daughter goes before a gathering.
Obviously, Ruth Graham Lott has.
Ruth is
her mother. Ann Graham Lott has some horsepower.
She has, yes.
Her last name is Graham, so and her dad is Billy Graham.
Exactly. So when she speaks, some people are going to go, what do you think about that?
I really don't know a lot about Mrs. Lott. I certainly have a great deal of respect for her father. I just don't know her that well. I think it's important to listen to what she has to say. She's certainly entitled to her opinions. She did not say anything that should be new or surprising to either of us, because this whole world is in a bad shape. But I might add that there's reference after reference after reference in the New Testament saying it's close, it's close, it's close, it's going to happen, it's going to happen. I believe that it's going to happen when it happens, and that each of us need to be prepared as best we can. But I'm always concerned when people start saying, I don't know if you remember it, Chuck, in the late 60s, early 70s, there was all the talk about Gog and Magog, and that's Russia, and
the late great planet.
Yeah, you know, all that stuff. I didn't remember it, but that's Hal Lindsey, I guess.
Correct.
You know, and what did that accomplish? Nothing other than getting people fired up. I'm just leery of that stuff. Marilyn's on the line. Let's see what she has to say.
505-780-1800-730-2727. Hi, Marilyn. You're on the Bible study.
Yes, good morning to both of you.
Good morning, Marilyn.
Incredible experience in Honduras, and how sad.
It is sad.
And I don't understand, and I'm sure the rest of us out here in the world that really care don't understand why this has to be. But I do question what Billy Graham's daughter said on Israel, if I understood that right. Was it where she was talking about Israel, the geographic area over there?
Yes.
Well, because you know my friend, well, you don't know her, she's gone home to the Lord, and she was a Christian, and she died of breast cancer last year. And she came to me and she said, oh, Marilyn, we need to pray for Israel. And she went to one of the Baptist churches, I'm not sure which one, here in this area. And this was what they were basing the Israel of the Bible on. The geographic Israel that the Jewish people established over there to escape the Nazis and the Russians. And I think that really needs to be clarified to people, that we're talking about the new Israel when Jesus comes again.
All right.
Okay.
Marilyn, thank you.
I
don't know that I'm really qualified to give you an answer on that. I can give you my opinion on it. Obviously, the nation of Israel has been in existence for almost 60 years, and I recognize that. I'm glad that it worked out that the Jewish people have a homeland now and that they had a place to go, as you said, to escape persecution. I think that the lines are blurred between a nation Israel and the people Israel, and I think too much emphasis is placed on the nation of Israel versus the people Israel. Chuck, what's your take?
Well, the only thing I can say is what most of the pastors and our seminary professors have said, if I am discerning the core of Marilyn's question, and that is that once the Lord came to this earth and redeemed Israel and built his church, that any land area that calls itself Israel is certainly welcome to be Israel, but it's just another nation like any other nation. and the theocracy that we read about in the Old Testament, where the God of the people was the God of the Bible, that is not what we have in Israel today.
No.
As a matter of fact, there are a lot of Jews in Israel that don't even believe,
in God.
Yeah.
I think it's important that we realize that we are the new Israel, that by virtue of our faith in Jesus Christ, we're the new Israel, and we need to recognize that and appreciate that. You know, politically, I'm certainly pro-Israel. You know, they have a right to exist, and I honor that, and I honor the people of Israel, and I appreciate the fact that in the past, American politics has been supportive of Israel. I think that's commendable. But again, a nation, you know, we're talking about a nation who happened to call themselves Israel, and I think it's important that we as believers in Jesus Christ recognize that we are the new Israel. We are God's people.
So Ann Graham Lotz believes that the reemergence of Israel in 1948, the calamities that we're seeing taking place around the world, certainly not excluding the economic calamity that's underway right now, are all signs that Jesus' return is imminent, just the corner.
Israel's been in existence, I said, 40, it's 60 years.
No, you said 60.
I did?
Yep.
Okay,
yep.
60 years. Why are we just seeing this resurgence that Mrs. Lotz sees now? Why is it coming to the forefront? Is it the Gaza issue? I don't know. I would like to speak with her.
Well, I don't know either. But I have to say, I mean, from what I understand, there are some writings of Martin Luther where he interpreted some of the things that he was seeing as maybe indications that he was not a date setter by any stretch, but indications that it couldn't be very long before Jesus would be back. Some of the New Testament letters
said the same thing.
Seemed to indicate the same thing, that they're expecting Jesus back
at any time.
When World War II was underway, there were some folks who were convinced that
this
Hitler
is the
was
end.
The Antichrist.
That's right.
This was going to be the end. However, in the day and age in which you and I live, where it seems that the current most threatening conflict is not between, for example, in the Cold War, the United States and the former Soviet Union. It's not between Eastern Europe and Western Europe, but it would appear to be between Christianity and Islam, Judeo-Christianity, if you want to do that, if you want to put Christians and Jews together. Islam seems to have hatred for those things. And that we could have war, not because somebody wants to take some territory from somebody, but because somebody thinks that if you believe in any other God other than Allah, you need to die for that. Well, I guess that's probably the way that's been for a long time, except now some of these groups seem to have access to nuclear weapons. And we've seen terrorism around the world, and perhaps there will be an incident involving nuclear weapons or a dirty bomb, and that will be the flashpoint that will bring on the end. Now, I share with you the caution that we can't come to the conclusion that because Ann Graham Lotz's father is Billy Graham, that somehow she's got a hotline to heaven and information the rest of us don't have. But I think most of us are thinking, you know, we could end this without God's help. We could do it all on our own if we lost control of ourselves. And that makes this time different than any other time that's ever been.
I certainly agree, Chuck. I think that it's that faceless nature of terrorism. You know, before the enemy was communism and the Soviets. Now it's a faceless enemy. You know, we don't have one person that we can focus our concern on. It's this faceless, elusive, nebulous type of situation, like the sort of Damocles that hangs over our head. You know, could a dirty bomb or a nuclear device trigger the end? Absolutely. You know, am I going to lose sleep over it? No, because ultimately God is in control. And whatever happens, he says, and I have to take him at his word, that it's going to be for our good, that he will even bring good out of bad. That would certainly be a bad situation. But I'm not going to lie awake nights, tossing and turning, wringing my hands, saying, oh my gosh, somebody's going to have a dirty bomb, and that's going to be the end of it.
Luther is reported to have said, maybe you have better verification on this than I don't know if this is legend or if this is fact, but Luther is reported to have said something like, when asked, what would you do, Dr. Luther, if you knew the world were going to end tomorrow? He is reported to have said something like, I'd go out and plant a tree, which is obviously a long-range kind of thing to do. Because whether the world ends tomorrow or whether it goes on tomorrow, he seemed to think that the business of today is to take care of the business of today. Is that kind of what you're saying?
I would say so. On the deal with Luther, so many things that he said, you remember we talked about that in last night's class, so many of the things that he said were said in table talk situations where he really did not want it to be scribed, yet it was.
I've seen table talk, by the way, because down here at the seminary, they have a little snack bar. And if you go down there and eat lunch at just the right time, there could be anywhere from 7, 8, 9.
No, wrong table talk.
Oh no! This is 7 or 8, 9 seminary professors sitting around the table and debating some of the fine points, fine theological points, and outside of them, in a kind of a circle of around them, are seminary students that are eating lunch, but they got one ear on the conversation. That's the kind of table talk that you're referring to.
So many things that Luther said in that environment. Again, my take is that he did not intend for that to be scribed. That was maybe not a personal conversation, but he didn't intend for that to be scribed. I had heard the story about the tree, and I don't know if that's urban legend or if he actually said it. Regardless, whether he said it or not, I think that it's a good thing for us to hear, and a good thing for us to apply to our own lives. Is worrying about it going to make a difference? Is worry of any kind going to make a difference? Absolutely not.
Now, you and I, we're probably not very cool here because, you know, we're saying that if we knew the world were going to end tomorrow, we'd go out and plant a tree. We'd go out with Dr. Luther and plant a tree. However, based on the books that have the most success in the Christian bookstores, the Left Behind series, for example, with Jerry Jenkins and Tim LaHaye, the phenomenal success of the late, great Planet Earth back in the 70s, people are very interested in this. People want to hear about this.
Yes, they do.
And everybody begins with, nobody knows the day or the hour.
That's the thing. That's the thing. Nobody knows, but I'm going to expound on this like I do know. That's my concern.
Is that wrong?
I think it is. I think it is. My concern, especially in those points that you cited, those works, is that they're not giving a true scriptural perspective on those issues. At least that's my opinion now. You can have your own opinion. But when you handle scripture incorrectly, and you come up with incorrect assumptions, again, using that preface, you know, nobody knows, but that's where we get in trouble.
505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Ellen, you're on the Bible study.
Good morning. I'll try to make this very quick.
Okay.
When we talk about the Left Behind series and Israel and all this hell, Lindsay and all that, friends of mine who are former Lutheran, some former Catholics, have really gotten sucked into that whole thinking. As soon as I mentioned to them, you know, they came up with this whole teaching in about 1850 over in England, in the Plymouth Brethren Church. If this is a true scriptural doctrine, how come it took that long to come up with this teaching?
And what do they say?
They scratch their head and say, oh, I didn't know that. And I've known Lutherans who are practice the Lutheran faith who believe this because they read all this stuff. And I mean, it's not my job to tell the pastors what to teach, but I wish they'd make it clear that this is really a new teaching, in the...
And I think the teaching that you're focusing on is the teaching about the rapture, is it not?
That, and this whole thing, the Left Behind series and all that.
Okay.
I knew the people who wrote these, the Jenkins, I knew the family back in Chicago.
Really?
Many years ago. And that was, they were fundamentalists of that stripe, you know,
mm-hmm.
The decision theology, theology of glory bit and all that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And Ellen, I appreciate your comments. Let me just...
Sure, I'll hang up and listen.
Okay, well, thank you for your call. Don't ever think that you can't make a suggestion to the pastor about something that needs to be addressed. I can only speak for myself, but I welcome that. If there's something on your mind or on the mind of one of my parishioners, my door is open and I want to hear about it. I think we as Lutheran Christians, Lutheran clergy in particular, don't talk about these issues enough. Everywhere you look, you're bombarded with the Left Behind series, with books, movies, all this stuff. And I don't think that we've done a good enough job addressing it from a scriptural perspective and trying to correct those false teachings. Chuck, what do you think?
Well, I'm just kind of stuck on the point of as soon as you say something like that, well, you don't really have anything, when I say you and I, you don't really have anything to add to the jazz, and what you just said, ain't going to sell any books.
No.
Now, if you can come up with 88 reasons why Jesus will return in 1988, you can sell some books. I think that guy got rich.
Well, I'll tell you what.
Didn't turn out to be right. But
why don't you and I set a date and come up with those reasons, and let's see how much money we can make, Chuck.
I think you and I can probably embarrass ourselves enough without doing something like that.
I think we do a good enough job on that.
Pastor Marty Springer, thanks for spending some time with us here today.
Always good to be with you, Chuck.
And
please, if I can get the last word in,
sure.
I don't know if that's
if
that's legal with the host or not. I'd ask our listeners to pray for World Gospel Outreach. I'd ask our listeners to pray for people in these third world countries who have absolutely nothing. That the Lord would bless them, that the Lord would continue to call them to faith, and that we as Americans would see the need, would support missions through our various denominations. God bless our Senate and their mission outreach. There's a real need out there.
Well said. Thank you, sir. On the Bible study tomorrow, we will continue in the book of Judges. Pastor John Lekomsky is due, and he'll be happy because it's not the book of James. We'll be in chapters 13 and 14 tomorrow, and our Ask the Pastor guest will be Pastor Lane Berglund from Faith Lutheran Church in Churubusco, Indiana.
Listen to Chuck Ratherton and guests Monday through Friday at the same time on the Bible study. The Bible Study is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for the Bible Study to continue. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can contact us on the Internet at kfuo.org. For a free copy of the Bible Study, please visit the audio archive section of our homepage. That's kfuo.org. The Bible Study is a broadcast service of Worldwide KFUO.